You're listening to the best of the Union Edge, Labor's Talk Radio. Like what you hear? Contact this station and ask them to play the entire three-hour show. Visit theunionedge.com to find out more.
Welcome back to the Union Edge, Labor's Talk Radio. My name's Angela Bachman. I'm here with Brittany Sheets on this lovely Friday, as usual.
Hey, everyone. Thank you, as always, so much for tuning in and joining us. We're going to have lots of fun, as always. And don't forget, you know, follow us online, Facebook and Twitter, The Union Edge. We have all kinds of happenings. Keep up with what we're doing, what we're reading, what we're seeing. And let us know what you think. Don't be shy. We love your comments and feedback. And joining us right now, though, to switch gears and kick things off on this lovely Friday, we have Doug Cunningham of Workers Independent News. Doug, welcome back.
Angela, Brittany, great to be with you guys again, as always. And I'm just about to start off a vacation this weekend, too, so I'm in an especially good mood today.
There you go.
I might not be so well-prepared as I usually am, but I'm at least in a good mood today.
Well, that's excellent. And, you know, Union One vacations, we're always happy about having those, right?
There you go. One of the stories, you know, from time to time with Workers Independent News, I like to highlight stories that aren't necessarily huge in terms of numbers of people, like, you know, when we cover Verizon, 39,000 workers with a contract to bargain at the bargaining table could strike at any time, those kind of stories. Those are sort of big stories. But this one about UPS pilots. The other day I spoke with Brian Godet. I had it in the newscast today. The UPS pilots there, the union, Independent Pilots Association, wants a change in safety rules because there's a different standard, they say, between commercial flights and cargo flights when it comes to pilot fatigue. And they made this announcement yesterday, which was the 2-year anniversary of a plane crash in which both the pilot and first officer on a cargo aircraft for UPS were killed. And the flight data recorder showed that this pilot and this first officer talked about being fatigued and wanting to have the same kinds of fatigue rules that applied to commercial pilots, and they ended up tragically crashing and losing their lives afterwards. And so it's a very dramatic way to make a point that this union wants to see these safety standards for pilots the same, whether it's commercial aircraft or a cargo plane.
Wow, that's so sad. So they were having this conversation right before their plane went down?
Yeah, they had, according to Brian Godet, who is a spokesperson for the Independent Pilots Association, he said that the flight data recorder showed in the investigation after the crash, the flight data recorder showed that they had actually talked about that at the beginning of the flight. And so the union is trying several different avenues to try and get this changed. They filed a lawsuit over it, over the safety issue. A ruling is expected on that next year, 2016. And they're also pushing Congress to take some action. They say the FAA and Congress failed here to take action after this crash. So very poignant story, unfortunate and tragic story, and this union is absolutely dedicated, they say, to making this change so that pilots who fly cargo aircraft have the same rest and fatigue rules that other pilots do.
And I think that's a very important thing. They should definitely have those same rules, just because, I mean, they're still flying that aircraft, too. And
well, sure. And, yeah. And you know, like they pointed out, even though they might not have passengers on cargo flights, if they go down, they could still go down in a populated area.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, from fatigue. So that's a very important issue. And something that doesn't usually get a whole lot of attention, actually. I mean, that kind of arcane split between commercial and cargo pilots and the rules of, you know, how they rest. But we like to highlight that kind of stuff every now and then.
I'm surprised that wasn't already a thing. But go on. What's the next story?
Well, I just want to talk about the child care workers in that movement. They're having a series of actions around the country, town halls. There was a town hall in Chicago about this. A congresswoman, Representative Jan Schakowsky, showed up and stood with the workers. And a person that I talked to about this, who was at the event, his name is Matt Hoffman, and he's a PhD, and his wife is also a PhD. He's an adjunct professor. And yet they're struggling along with low wages and feel solidarity with the low-wage workers in the Fight for 15 movement. He said he's lucky to make $20,000 or $25,000 a year, even though he has a PhD, and even though his wife has one, he says they can't afford child care, which is ironic because child care workers are struggling because they can't afford to get by on what they're paid to care for children, and at the same time, parents who need child care are paying much more than they used to for child care, and so they're struggling too, and
wow.
It's a strange situation, and Mary Kay Henry, the SEIU president, pointed that out. It's so ironic that low-wage working parents are struggling to pay for child care while the child care workers themselves are struggling to support their own families. So there's kind of a solidarity coming together of parents who are in this situation struggling along and these workers to try to raise their wages as part of the Fight for 15 movement.
Well, I'm glad to hear that there's a solidarity because it could just as easily go the other way. You know, it could just as easily be, I'm not making enough money to pay you, so why do you think that you deserve more money? I'm glad to hear that it's going the opposite and it's like, well, we all need more money here. Let's fix this.
Isn't that refreshing? Instead of, you've got more than I do, so maybe we should take more from you, you know, take it away from you and drive us all down. Instead of being driven down, they want to take the high road and pull everyone up. That is kind of refreshing, isn't it?
Yeah. It's a really nice thing to see.
You know, one other thing we'll have to keep watching to see if they get anywhere, but this proposal by the Senate, by some Republicans on the Finance Committee in the Senate to do away with the labor union at the IRS. And right now, IRS employees are represented by the NTEU, the National Treasury Employees Union. They have about 46,000 members at the IRS, about 85,000 members altogether. And so this proposal at the Senate Finance Committee from the Republicans was to eliminate that because they think that you can't be in a union at the IRS because IRS workers have to be apolitical, is what they're saying. And so they're trying to suggest that because you're a member of a labor union, you can't do your job in a fair and efficient manner.
That is so far from the truth.
Well, does that also mean that if you work for a company, then you can't be fair and do your job? I mean, like, at what point do we put a limit on, like, you can't do anything else in your life to make you a fair person? That seems kind of ridiculous.
Great point. I mean, it's ridiculous. You know, I mean, they're talking about this union being, quote, left-leaning, you know, a union and highly partisan union. Well, that may be, but that's that union's right. You know, this is,
yeah.
These are the same Republican politicians, by the way, who believe that corporations are people.
That's also
First Amendment
true.
Rights, but somehow labor unions do not have those rights, apparently. And the outgoing president of this union, the NTEU outgoing president, Colleen Kelly, says there's never been a bipartisan study of IRS employees, themselves members of the union, having anything to do with creating a political environment at the IRS. In other words, attacking people using the power of the IRS based on politics. She says there's never been a bipartisan study that points to that as being a problem.
So here's the thing. Why is it that the IRS is so I guess I don't feel like your politics should be a part of whether or not you work for the IRS, and just because you belong to a union doesn't automatically mean you're a Democrat. They can't pre-screen you when you hire you and decide whether or not you're, you know, what's your political affiliation, and that will decide upon whether or not we hire you. Like, you can't do that.
No, you can't. And of course, people that are members of union vote for all kinds of different political parties and different candidates. So I mean, it's a problematic because also one of the things it signals is if they're going to do this at the IRS or try to do it, will they try to do it in other federal employee unions and other agencies, making the same argument that you can't somehow work for government and be in a union because unions have a political agenda? Well, you know, come on, then you can't do business in the United States because corporations have a political agenda. So.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's ridiculous, but it's another attack, another front opening up, it appears, of attacks on labor unions. And again, coming from right-wing Republicans in this case.
I definitely agree.
Right, because all the ones we have already aren't enough. Sorry, go ahead,
yeah.
Brittany.
I was gonna say, something we were kind of discussing was the political debates. They shouldn't be, you know, between the candidates. It should be between the big corporations that back each candidate, and the candidate can just stand in front of them as a representation of who they're supposed to be representing.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, I like that idea. Reducing these candidates who are nothing more than these puppets anyway, reducing them to corporate icons. Just make them the corporate icon.
Exactly. I have to do say that is the one thing that I like about Donald Trump is that he cuts out the middleman, right? Like, he's not donating to a candidate. He's like, screw this, I'm just going to do it myself. Like, I wish some more of these guys would just be like, all right, I'm just going
to
run.
Don't mess with these billionaire puppets. Go right to the billionaire puppet master himself.
Exactly. He is the one holding the marionette strings, everybody.
Yeah, he's holding the crazy strings, too, apparently.
Oh, yes.
All of the strings.
Yes. He has all of the strings.
Doug, we've got about another minute. Anything else?
I just wanted to encourage people, you know, this is important what we do, what you guys do at the Union Edge, doing labor talk, and what we at Workers Independent News do with covering labor news. This is important, so if you're listening to this, get engaged with this process somehow. Support us, support the Union Edge, support Workers Independent News. So I just would encourage people to do that and to go to our website, laborradio.org, check out what we do there. We're unique in the world of radio news in this country, and it's worth a look, and it's worth a listen, and spending some time there. So please do that and support us whenever and wherever you can. And once again, I'm happy to say that I support the Union Edge, and thank you guys for your support of Workers Independent News over the years.
Well, thank you, Doug, as always, for joining us and coming on and letting us know what's going on and what's happening. We've got to run, though. That's Doug Cunningham of Workers Independent News. I'm Brittany Sheets here with Angela Bachman, and you've been listening to the Union Edge, Labor's Talk Radio.
You're listening to the Union Edge, Labor's Talk Radio. For more information about the show, go to theunionedge.com.
Welcome back to the Union Edge, Labor's Talk Radio. I'm Brittany Sheets with Angela Bachman today.
You can find us online at theunionedge.com and on Facebook and Twitter. And right now we have Chris Garlock from the DC Labor Council joining us.
So good to be with you guys. Happy Friday.
Happy Friday indeed. It is a wonderful Friday for the summer, might I say.
I know. We are so loving this. It's just amazing. Normally, it's just a sweltering August here in D.C. Most people, you know, do anything they can to get out of town. But I got to tell you, it's just gorgeous. I have no complaints. Although, I got a ton of news for you. You guys ready?
Oh, okay. We're so ready.
Okay. Couple of quick things. Yesterday, I walked not one, but two picket lines. We were back out. Operating Engineers 99, still trying to get their contract at the CIA. I'll be filing a story on that within the hour on our website, dclabor.org. No real updates on that, although they are going back into negotiations next week, so keep your fingers crossed. Then I drove up to Maryland, and we did a picket with CWA 2108, which is, you know, one of the many locals that are out there doing demonstrations, trying to get a contract at Verizon. They were waving these big red noodle thingies using the pool, which is, I think, where a lot of them would have rather have been, but out there on Route 29. So that was fun. We will also have a story posted on that within the hour. They're not on strike yet, but I talked to the president of the local, and people are pretty frustrated. You know, they gave up a bunch in their last contract a few years back, and the company's making $1 billion a month, and they don't want to share any with the workers, so they're not too happy about that.
$1 billion a month.
Yeah, you heard that right.
I can't even imagine. That kind of money is ridiculous. I can't even imagine
that. And that's what makes
that.
It so insane to me that they won't, like, budge on any of this. And they're just, they're not being nice. They're not being nice at all. And there's not even, like, a better company to really switch to at this point because you don't want to support them because they're all equally as evil.
Well, here's the problem, guys. You know, when you have a bully, and, you know, if you give the bully, you know, even a little bit of what they want, you know, they don't go like you or I would go like, not that we're bullies, but, you know, be like, oh, thank you very much, appreciate that, move on, right? No, mm-hmm. A bully's like, huh, got that. I wonder what I can do to get some more. So unfortunately, that's where we're at. So we'll keep you posted, you know, but the Verizon workers are very frustrated. And by the way, I saw that the AT&T workers, this is the Northeast, 40,000 Verizon workers in the Northeast. In the Southeast, a whole bunch of AT&T workers are in a similar situation. I'm waiting to get some details on that. That's a bit south of us, but of course, you know, it's all one big labor movement, so we try and keep up with stuff. But I want to let you know, we just posted a bunch more cool stories. There's a story from the Solidarity Center about a conference they just did this week on labor migration, which is a huge issue. I think there are more labor migrants around the globe than at any time in history, so that's a really interesting story. Got some great photos. Really neat story about a fight by racetrack workers at Pimlico. You remember the Preakness Stakes a little bit back with American Pharoah winning the Triple Crown? So there's, I think, $85 million was wagered on that, and very little of that trickles down to the folks that actually work at the racetrack. So they're organizing. Nice little stories, some nice photos there. Interesting story. The Republicans are trying to get a bill together to let the Veterans Administration fire their workers just at, you know, managerial will, basically, which is interesting if you think about all the problems that the VA has had. And mostly they've been problems with administration. And so the Republican solution is to let the managers fire the workers. How do you think that's going to work out?
I don't see that working at all, considering that's not solving any problem here.
My guess, guys, is it's going to create more problems.
Yeah, pretty much. That's all I can imagine happening with that, honestly.
Right, because I would imagine that the people that are actually taking care of patients and seeing people day to day are the ones that are actually getting things done. Of course, this is me speculating. I have no part of it, but it seems to me that the people visiting would be more trusting of those who are directly handling their care versus, you know, random managers at the top tier.
I think you're right about that. I mean, I just don't see this really working out for them. It's just amazing. Oh, another cool thing, Amalgamated Bank, which is New York-based but has a branch here in D.C., they just went ahead and raised the minimum wage for all workers at the bank to $15, effective immediately. And it turns out, we've got the story on our website as well, but it turns out that, you know, the banking industry has the money, literally, right? I mean, that's where the money is. But they don't like to give too much of it to their workers. Right. And so there's a lot of banks where they just don't pay their workers very well. I was sort of surprised to find this out, to be honest. I never worked in a bank. I don't know people who work in banks, but I just sort of assumed, you know, if you're going to have people handling money, you'd probably want to give them some just to, you know, sort of keep them happy, right?
Mm-hmm. That was actually an interesting conversation we had last week. We were talking with, I'm not sure exactly who it was. I feel like it might have been Buck or someone. I'm not totally sure who we were talking to. But we had a conversation about that, the fact that they raised the wage to $15 an hour, and that was a great thing. But it was something we never really thought about, because you see the teller, you go in there, they're dressed usually very nicely, they're real friendly, they seem very intelligent, they know what they're doing. I mean, they're handling your money and your bank accounts. So you kind of, like, you know, put that faith in that person, and you think that they're, you know, you would think they don't make, like a measly minimum wage, that they make, like, nice money, like, for working there. And surprisingly, a lot of the tellers don't make $15 an hour.
I was shocked, literally shocked. I just, you know, it amazed me that they would be making. Honestly, and I love Amalgamated, they're big supporters of the film festival and so forth, but I was kind of surprised even they, and they're good. They've got a union, you know, representing their workers there. I was surprised that they had a few workers that needed to be brought up to that. Although I will note that apparently one of the things they look at is the ratio of the top person to the lowest paid person. And Amalgamated has a really good ratio, but a lot of the ratios in a lot of other banks are pretty bad. You know, top managers making boku bucks and the frontline workers not making that much.
Yeah, I could definitely see that, especially some of the bigger banks, such as like a PNC or something like that. I could definitely see that. It's interesting.
So they're spending all their money on those fancy TV ads, probably.
Oh, yeah, probably, right.
This is starting
one
to sound like
one
hospitals.
One other one I wanted to share with, sorry?
Starting to sound a little bit like hospitals. Spending all our money on TV ads. Anyway, continue.
No, just one other one. This is a really touching story. The longest serving state employee in Maryland is retiring, and he has been working for 66 years.
Oh, my goodness.
How old do you think? His name is Tim Hyman, photographer. How old do you think Tim was when he started working for the State Highway Administration as a photographer?
16? That's my guess.
Good guess. That's what I would have gone for. 12.
12?
Oh, my God.
Whoa.
And this is in the story we've got on our website, bclabor.org. But he said, you know, back then, you know, I mean, these days everybody wants to be younger than they are. But, you know, back then you needed to get a job, you know, bring some money in, support the family, contribute. And so, yeah, you went in there and you said, yeah, I'm 16 or 17 or 18 or whatever it took to get the job. So amazing guy. We've got a great story, great photo. He's really sort of seen photography change over the years. Apparently, he's got about a bazillion years in sick days bank because he just never took a sick day, never got fired, never got disciplined. Just a really sort of heartwarming story. And he's planning to just kick back in his retirement now. So good for him.
That's awesome. That's always a nice little heartwarming story, you know, end things off on a Friday.
Yeah, I can't wait to go read that. That looks very sweet.
Go check it out. Yeah, we just had a massive, I had all these stories I've been sort of sitting on. I was like, you know what? It's Friday. I'm just going to let them out into the world and have it, you know, let folks check it out. We've been posting them on Facebook and Twitter and, you know, just let them out there. Let the good news out there.
Awesome.
Let folks sort that.
And then where can everybody find them?
DCLabor.org and the Union Edge. You guys get first crack. How cool
yes.
is that?
I know. It's so awesome. We love it. We will be posting some of the stuff here, guys. Tune in, check it out, follow our stuff, and you will be able to find it, and we will make sure if you can't find it, just let us know, and we will help you find it. So, as always,
thanks,
Chris, thank you so much for joining us.
You guys rock. Have a great weekend.
You too. That was Chris Garlock of the D.C. Labor Council. I'm Brittany Sheets here with Angela Bachman, and you've been listening to the Union Edge Labor's Talk Radio.
You're listening to the best of the Union Edge Labor's Talk Radio. Like what you hear? Contact this station and ask them to play the entire 3-hour show. Visit theunionedge.com to find out more.
New York is just one state seeing some double-digit rate hike requests from health insurers under the Affordable Care Act. Obama administration officials are urging states to cut insurers' requests for rate increases, which usually result in premium hikes for consumers. Matt Anderson of the New York Department of Financial Services says state officials are closely scrutinizing rate increases, and they also want to make sure the companies are offering consumers more affordable options.
We're focused right now on trying to move away from a fee-for-service model and more towards a value-based model. And that means rather than just, you know, reimbursing a value-based model, you're trying to make sure you get value for what you pay for and better results.
He notes that health insurance costs are about 50% lower for individuals even after this year's increases. I'm Nia Hamm reporting.
An Oregon labor union is the target of a lawsuit challenging its right to represent and charge dues to people who don't want to be union members. The Freedom Foundation filed the suit yesterday. Some members of SEIU Local 503 say they're perplexed by the legal action. Melita Christian of Roseburg, a personal support worker for people with disabilities, points out that union membership isn't mandatory. She thinks SEIU's success in bargaining for better wages and benefits is seen by some as intimidating.
I don't feel I have to be a member, but I'm choosing to be a member. That's my choice. Our union is very strong, and it's a member-ran union. They've done a lot of good stuff for us, and we have a lot of strength in numbers.
The union represents more than 20,000 home care and personal care workers. The lawsuit also names Governor Kate Brown and several state department heads. The Freedom Foundation gets its funding from conservatives and says it was created to fight public sector unions. It is also challenging SEIU in Washington State, where the group is based. For those who provide care for state-paid clients in Oregon, the same wage scale, benefits, and other contract provisions apply whether or not they join the union. Penny Wicklander, a home care worker from Pendleton, thinks it's a small price to pay for the results of collective bargaining.
They have benefits. They've got some retirement that they can get into, the paid sick leave, and then you're part of a bigger thing and you feel like you have a voice in what's happening around you.
The lawsuit may be fallout from last year's U.S. Supreme Court decision in an Illinois case. The justices in Harris versus Quinn ruled 5-4 that home care workers there could not be required to join a union or pay dues. In Oregon, SEIU Local 503's executive director says they are not required to do either. I'm Chris Thomas, Oregon News Service.
Texas leads the nation in total output of wind energy, according to two new reports from the U.S. Energy Department. The Lone Star State has installed more than 14,000 megawatts of power, more than twice as much as California, the next highest state. The studies also show Texas has more wind capacity than all but five countries worldwide. Luke Metzger with Environment Texas says wind energy is not only good for the environment, it's also good for business.
But also potentially export that clean power to other states that are looking for ways to reduce their carbon emissions as well, and really could help position Texas as an exporter of wind power.
The Energy Department says the continued growth in wind power solidifies the U.S. as a global leader in the sector. The reports conclude with increased output, growing demand, and the lowest price points the nation has ever seen, the domestic wind energy market remains strong. Metzger points out Texas is not only number one in wind energy, the Lone Star State also leads the nation in climate pollution. Wind power is a key component of the EPA's recently announced Clean Power Plan to reduce carbon emissions. Governor Greg Abbott and other state leaders have called the plan an overreach and have vowed to fight the new rules in court.
Polls show that Texans believe we need to take action to reduce global warming pollution from power plants. They're excited about wind and solar power. The public supports action on climate. Our leaders are the ones on the wrong side of this issue.
Metzger is referring to a 2014 Yale University poll, which showed 61% of Texans favor strict limits on carbon emissions from existing power plants. This is Eric Galatis reporting for the Texas News Service.
You're listening to the best of the Union Edge, Labor's Talk Radio. Like what you hear? Contact this station and ask them to play the entire three-hour show. Visit theunionedge.com to find out more.
Welcome back to the Union Edge, Labor's Talk Radio. I'm Angela Bachman. I'm here with Brittany Sheets today.
Hey, everyone. Thank you so much for joining us. If you're interested about what we're talking about, check us out online, www.theunionedge.com. We are also on Facebook and Twitter. If you just search The Union Edge, you can find what we've been reading about, what we've been talking about, what we've been saying. And by all means, contribute to the conversation and let us know your thoughts and what you think.
Absolutely. And, you know, when we talk about unions, most people think of blue-collar unions, maybe some office unions. But I want to switch gears a little bit and talk about entertainers' unions. We have two big ones. We have Actors Equity, which is stage actors, and SAG-AFTRA, which are film actors. Right now, my friend, True Verrett Fleming, is joining us, and he's about to become a member in 2 weeks. Right, True?
Yeah, that's true. First off, I want to thank you ladies for having me. I will join the union officially myself in about 2 weeks or so for doing a professional production of The Choir Boy at The Rep, which is Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania's, the Pittsburgh Playhouse's professional company.
It's very exciting.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. So the reason I'd love to talk to you, maybe if we have time, also about how that process works, because it is kind of a process to get into these unions. Yeah. But I wanted to talk a little bit about some drama that we have going on right now.
Well, basically, what's going on is there's a production produced by Tyler Perry. I know a lot of people know who he is. He has a lot of movies out and plays. Basically, it's a Madea play, and the Equity Union has decided to put it on the Do Not Work list. And because SAG has an agreement with its sister union, they also put it on their, you know, this is deemed unmember-like, if you will. So basically that's happening because the production company has, they haven't signed the appropriate contracts for the union. So right now there's a lot of drama on Facebook with a lot of people upset about Tyler Perry's plays being put on a Do Not Work list, and they really have no idea what the union does for the actors and why it's really important that it was put on a Do Not Work list.
Right, so the Do Not Work list essentially means that the Equity actors should not be working on this list, and they can face punishment if they do, right?
Absolutely. I mean, up to termination of their membership, really. And I think that that would be a sad thing based off of doing, you know, one play. Or, and realistically, I mean, it is a tour, and it is work, and it is, you know, opportunity and possibilities for a lot of actors, you know, professional or working or non-working. But, you know, I personally, whether I was in the union or not in the union, wouldn't do it based off of that standard because, you know, we all take our work seriously to some degree, right?
Right, of course. And you said that they haven't signed a contract, so presumably there's a reason for that, right?
Yeah.
It's probably a health and safety thing, or what are some of the other reasons that they would not?
Well, realistically, what I personally think it comes down to is the fact that productions that don't have the representation of the union, they kind of can get away with a lot of things, so they don't want to have to, you know, pay the appropriate wages necessarily based on scale. You know, the working conditions could be terrible, the hours could be terrible. You know, there's no health care being paid into, there's no retirement being paid into. I mean, these are the serious things that, you know, these working and professional actors look forward to. And, you know, each production that they do, they want to, you know, take care of their profession. They have bills and things to pay as well, you know, so.
Right. Just because you enjoy your work and it's fun doesn't mean it's not also work and it's
absolutely
not something you take seriously.
Yeah, absolutely. So, I don't know. There's a lot of drama about it right now. And this morning I just kind of had to say something about it realistically. I mean, there's a lot of misinformation about, you know, the union in itself. And, you know, of course, we all don't know what that production company has in store for these actors. I mean, we don't know, but we do know that they're not choosing to represent the actors through the union. So, I mean, that could speak a lot about the production company, really.
I think so, because I think the union generally has pretty good standards as far as working conditions are concerned.
Yeah.
What are some of the things that you've heard people say that are just complete misinformation?
Well, the interesting thing is one of the topics that kind of came up as a subtopic is the race thing. I mean, they, you know, a lot of the people who have commented on the stories are African American, and they're speaking from a very sensitive place, I'm sure. And it's like, you know, he's one of the few people who's giving jobs to, you know, a lot of African American actors or actors of color. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, they're saying things like they want actors to turn down their only opportunities, this, that, and the other. So, you know, in my opinion, it's like, but would you really want to have like a pity role because there are less opportunities when realistically there are just there are fewer opportunities for everyone. You know, one of the things I said is that there are people who are more talented. There are people who have more connections. There are people, you know, who look prettier. There's no real defining factor as to how actors get their jobs. So because of that, like, I wouldn't want to do his production knowing that they're not going to represent me in the right way just because it might be my only job. Like,
right.
That's terrible. I think that's terrible. I mean, there are some actors who they would hop on in a heartbeat, and I congratulate them, absolutely. But I know what my work is worth, and that's really what it comes down to. And I also want to make sure that I can retire when I'm ready.
Yeah, absolutely. This is all really interesting, and I didn't necessarily, like, I don't know a lot about this whole, like, area of work, so it's all very, like, new to me. But I think it's really interesting that, yeah, you guys have the do not work list, and to me, that kind of, I feel like that's a very clear line of, well, clearly we're not going to support this because they're not keeping in mind, like, the health and safety of their workers. Like, this is just, it's a different form of workplace, but this is a standard union thing. Like, they fight for the health and safety and well-being of their workers, and that's one of their utmost first things that they do, and that's a big reason people organize in the first place, is because of their working conditions.
Yeah.
And I kind of feel like I wouldn't want to be put in that position where I'm taking a job to take a job that is potentially hazardous to, like, my health and well-being.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I feel like that's a very simple concept for people to understand, but a lot of times people see the word union and they see it as a, oh, you just want more money.
Yeah.
And it's like, no, that's not what it is. We don't want to work like a 20-hour day for zero pay, and, you know, if we get hurt on the job, don't file a report.
Exactly.
Like, no, that's not how this is supposed to work.
Well, funny story. I mean, one of the things that I read was from a gentleman who basically said, he was like, what? There's a union for actors? And he said something along the lines of, like, not being able to have normal unions. And I basically just said, I was like, well, you know, these unions for the actors have been around just as long as a lot of other unions. I mean, it really did mm-hmm. start with radio and broadcast, that, you know, people got representation for their talent. And the unions have been around. They will continue to be around. And people will continue to do good work. The work will be done. And, you know, if you have the opportunity to join a union because you want to or need to, then do it. And realistically, if you don't know about unions in themselves, then I don't really think that you can have an opinion on, you know, a do not work list, or, you know, upset about, you know, what's going on in the entertainment industry.
Yeah, definitely. And I think another potentially good comparison to this is actually the NFL cheerleaders. They work ridiculous hours. They are forced to go to all kinds of promotional events and do all kinds of things, and they make next to nothing by the time they buy their makeup and
yeah.
they buy their outfits. And they, I mean, I don't have any numbers in front of me, but this has been a consistent problem.
I remember,
and some of them have tried to get a union.
It was like, it figured out somewhere around, because of the, the team out in the, not the Ravens. I think the Ravens might have been involved. The Raiders. That was it. The Raiders.
Raiders.
The Raiders, actually, they won a lawsuit because of this, because of it figured out that their wages were like $4 or $5 an hour after they figured all of this out.
It was actually less than minimum wage. And so these glamorous jobs like acting and being a performer and cheerleading, all of these things, like, people just assume that you make lots of money, and people just assume that you have really good work days and all these things. But the hours can be really, really tough.
Absolutely. I mean, we definitely put a lot of work in. And of course, because people only really get to see the end product, whether it's, you know, a song on the radio, or whether it's, you know, a film production, they get to see the 2 hours of the end production. You come to see a play, you only get to see the live performance for that 2.5 hours. You don't get to see the rehearsal days. You don't get to see the work that's being done at home. You know, you don't get to see all the money that's invested into making this a career, just like any other career, you know. But because, you know, the standard idea of going to work is, you know, you do your 9-to-5 job and you go home and, you know, whatever else, people don't really see that it is something to be taken seriously. And because of that, we have the unions.
Yeah. And they're doing a pretty good job for us so far, I'd like to think. All right, True. Well, we have to run, but I'd love to get you back sometime to talk about the process of joining a union, because it is kind of different, and it's a sort of a different process for actors.
Oh, yeah, I can't wait.
Interesting.
Absolutely, especially since I'll be joining in about 2 weeks.
Fantastic. Well, thanks so much. That is True Barrett Fleming. I'm Angela Bachman here with Brittany Sheets on the Union Edge Labor's Talk Radio.
improve your life? Join a union. Interested? Just ask us. We will show you how. TheUnionEdge.com.
Welcome back to the Union Edge, Labor's Talk Radio. I'm Brittany Sheets here with Angela Bachman.
Hey, Brittany. It's always good to be here.
We are having lots of fun, guys. Thank you so much for joining us. We've been having a great time with you. And as always, thank you for tuning in, whether you are listening on the radio, online, on your smartphone, however it is that you choose. But thank you anyways for tuning in and following us and keeping up with all the things we've been talking about. And to kick things off here, right now we're going back to Buck Gino of Work in Progress Radio. Buck, welcome back.
It's always a pleasure to be with you, ladies. It's one of the highlights of my week, actually.
Why, thank you, Buck. It's one of the highlights of our week, too, because we love talking to you.
You know, I was thinking, though, when I was listening to your segment with Deb Klein, I always enjoy listening to her. She's a dedicated organizer. You know, you were talking about Social Security, and you were talking about how, your generation has this way. Do you know exactly why Social Security will be there when you get ready to retire?
I don't know.
It'll be there because you're talking about it now and you want to keep it.
That sounds like a very good reason.
Yes, I hope so.
You know what I mean? It's just one of those things where, I think they've gotten the public. Just think of where we'd be if we would have followed the path of George W. Bush, where they would have allowed people to basically invest their own money in the stock market. What do you think about that? So I just think that, what is this, the 50-year anniversary of Social Security?
80, actually.
80, actually? Okay. So just remember that it will be there because you guys are willing to fight for it.
I hope so.
I said, to me, it's pretty simple. There'd be more than enough money in Social Security if they were just take off the cap off what the people pay on their income. Right now, I believe it's, $109,000. After that, you don't have to pay Social Security.
Yeah, I think it's something to that effect. And I completely agree that we should lift this cap because there's no reason that you don't have to contribute after that point.
Well, yeah, and those are the people that can afford it.
Yeah, that is also another very valid point.
Right.
Wow.
But like I said, it's just a sad state of affairs, and I think one of you were right. This is, this Social Security is basically the safety net for everyone. Pensions or anything else that they may acquire during the period of time, which are becoming far between. I don't see many companies offering up a defined benefit pension anymore at all. At best, most people are getting a 401k, which they contribute the majority of the money to.
That is very true. A lot of the jobs nowadays give you a 401k, and I find that a lot of younger people that I talk to don't necessarily know what a pension is or understand the concept of a pension, and whenever you talk about retirement, they just automatically go, yeah, you're 401k. And I'm like, no.
Yeah.
No, not quite. There's other options out there. And the other thing of it is I kind of feel like the pension has a bad connotation from what you hear in the media because you hear it hacked so many times anymore, and they put so much blame on that as the reason that there's not money in PA or we shouldn't have to pay this in New Jersey and stuff like that. And a big call is they want pension reform, but they don't realize that this is just – it's all about your wording. You're basically, let's steal from these people. It's not okay.
Well, most of the hardcore conservatives, they like to talk about is that people are getting some sort of freebie when they're getting a pension. The fact of the matter is that all these pensions were negotiated, bargained for, and there was money that people negotiated to get, and they could have just taken it and put it in their wallet.
Mm-hmm.
What they decided to do was they decided to put it into a pension fund so that they could retire. So in no way, shape, or form, and that it's employers' money at all. But they make it sound like it's the employers and those greedy workers are grabbing up this pension that they don't deserve. Well, it was money that they put in it by themselves.
Yeah, it was basically a built-in savings account. So they didn't have to, and you don't see it, you don't use it, you don't touch it kind of deal, and it's saved for your retirement.
Yeah, it was really hard getting pensions started, back in the late 50s or early 40s or even the early 60s because, the people that were there working still remembered the Depression when the banks took, you know, the money was no good. So it was really hard to get people to put money into a if you think there wasn't a lot of hot discussion in some of these smoky-filled union halls to put this money into a pension, you're mistaken, because it certain times it got pretty ugly. But the people that really, you know, stuck to their guns and got it done, and thank God they did, for a lot of millions of people.
Well, that's really good that they did that, and I found that's very, I don't know, it's an interesting thing to me, the pensions versus, you know, 401ks and other retirement forms. And I also find with Social Security, this is just something that a lot of younger individuals don't necessarily understand, and they don't totally get the concept of. To them, it's just kind of like a lot of jargon words that mean a lot of things that are very confusing.
Yeah, I'll admit I'm one of those people. I don't really know what a 401k does.
I just know it's like a type of retirement, basically, and it's like partial, like some of them have like a partial contribution from you, some of them have like also incorporated with that a partial contribution from your employer to like a certain percentage, and it just like tucks away and you get it when you retire.
Well, now hold on, it depends. Now you got to remember who the trustees of this 401k are, and that those are the employers. Now you look at what happened to Enron a few years ago, and things like that. So the benefit of there, again, that's why you should belong to a union and get a good union pension, is because you have a group of trustees that from both sides, management and the union, watch it out for yourself.
To be kind of careful with is sometimes these retirement plans are tied to like stocks in the stock market. And you have to be very careful, because when things fluctuate like that in the stock market, like I've seen people's retirements, like people who have had significant amounts of their money tied in with these things, they've taken really big hits to the retirement. And this is a problem, because you're relying on that money and it may not be there.
And that was my point at the beginning. If we had followed the path of George W. Bush, where they would have allowed people not to contribute Social Security, but to invest the money as they saw fit in the stock market, just look what happened to the stock market in, you know, in mid-2000s. There would be a lot of people in trouble. So, like I said, the reason that Social Security will be there in the end is because your generation is so adamantly talking about it.
And another help to that is Social Security Works, which is a great organization down in D.C. that they've made it their sole mission to get people to understand this is what Social Security is, this is what it does, and this is how we can fix it and make it better and expand it and make it so more people get it, there will be more money in it, and this will be sustained for years and years to come. And Alex Lawson and Lacey Crawford and all of them down there, they do like a great job of just kind of informing people and really like getting up on what's going on with it, and really educating people and going out there and talking to people and getting them to see that, hey, you know, we're younger people and we are standing here trying to like, you know, rally for Social Security and get you to understand that this is important at your age. You may not think so, but this is actually really important.
Yeah. Like I said, the more you move to your 30s and your 40s, and then you'll really start to pay attention then.
Oh, yeah, definitely. And I mean, I even see it like now, like, because I have a grandmother who kind of relies on Social Security. Mm-hmm. She has like a little bit of assistance, but she really doesn't get too much. And she lives a very, very tight budget. And she relies on that money and has her everything, food, calculated down to a T. And we've helped her out at times, because there have been times where she's like, oh, I don't have money for this copay for the doctor. And she's wanted to cancel a doctor's appointment because she doesn't have enough money to cover her copay. And I'm just like, and it's a sad thing, because it hasn't really kept up with, you know, the rate of inflation and the rate of what you need to sustain living in a home. Like, there's no reason that she shouldn't be able to live in it. She lives in a trailer, and she has had that, and she's paid it off, and she really only has to pay, like, lot rent, so she doesn't have a lot of bills, thank God. But even with that, the small bills that she does have, she can barely sustain with what she pulls in, and it's not like she can go to work. She's going to be 80 years old.
Well, you know, like I said, and that's why I just cringe when I hear people like Rubio and Huckabee and some of these other, all of them actually, talking about how they want to gently raise the age for Social Security. Now, if they had their way, it would be 100 and nobody would ever collect it. So, like I said, that's one of the big issues of this coming election.
Yeah, it is. And we have to run, Buck. Thank you so much for joining us today.
It was really a pleasure. Thanks a lot.
Take care. That was Buck Gino from Work in Progress Radio. I'm Angela Bachman here with Brittany Sheets on the Union Edge, Labor's Talk Radio. You can always find us online at theunionedge.com. We will see you next week.
You're listening to the best of the Union Edge, Labor's Talk Radio. Like what you hear? Contact this station and ask them to play the entire 3-hour show. Visit theunionedge.com to find out more.